It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Oh yeah, baby.
You know, Mitch.
They love their Cougars.
Mitch Harper.
Welcome on in, Cougar Tracks Podcast, powered by KSLSports.com. I'm your BYU insider, Mitch Harper. Happy as always to have you on board of the podcast. It's a fabulous Friday, May 20th edition of Cougar Tracks. Whether you're watching, streaming the show, listening on demand on the podcast, I always appreciate you checking out Cougar Tracks, your always in-depth look into the world of BYU athletics. So here's what we've got on tap for today's edition of the show. BYU women's basketball has a new head coach, Amber Whiting. She addressed the media earlier today. I'll share my thoughts on the hire and the next moves for BYU women's basketball as they get ready for the Big 12 Conference. The latest with BYU men's basketball in the transfer portal. And then I asked the question, what would cause Kalani Sitake to have a rant like Jimbo Fisher did yesterday? The Jimbo Fisher-Nick Saban feud was epic. It was incredible. It's what every college football fan was talking about yesterday. So I'll share some of my thoughts on that as well. Remember, the show is always available Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at high noon Mountain Time Live, and then available on all major podcasting platforms. So BYU women's basketball, they hire Amber Whiting to be the head coach. One of the most surprising hires, I think, in the last 40, 50 years of BYU athletics, not going to lie. You know, Amber Whiting, she comes from Burley High School, 4A Idaho High School Preps, 4A. Now she's going to be leading a program going into the Big 12 Conference. On the surface, it would seem like a massive, massive risk. And it still, honestly, to me, has the vibes of boom or bust potential. But I get the sense, looking into Amber Whiting's profile and her resume, and I think she's going to be a good fit at BYU. It's noteworthy, too, when she gets the hire, a lot of the people discussing her hiring are people well-versed into the recruiting world, the basketball community. They're all like, oh yeah, she's going to be really good. I just think that, you know, BYU women's basketball was really good under Jeff Judkins. Jeff Judkins, one of the winningest, he's the winningest coach in BYU basketball history, men's or women's. And he had a lot of success in the postseason. Unlike the men, they actually got to Sweet 16s, multiple. They won conference tournaments. They've actually done stuff that the men can never do the last 20 or so years. But I think also there was a little bit of a dose of reality given to BYU women's basketball at the end of this past season where they got handled by Portland. They won that game in the WCC tournament, but pretty much were they just physicality-wise, Portland was the better team. Gonzaga thumped them, and then they lost to an 11 seed in Villanova in the NCAA tournament. I think there's got to be an uptick in the level of recruiting for BYU women's basketball. Amber Whiting, I think, poses that chance for BYU to open up and broaden their horizons on the recruiting trail. And that, to me, I think, gives BYU, makes this hire, I think, a pretty good one. I think it's risky. I think it also speaks to limited resources that they're paying to the women's basketball. You know, I think the women's basketball program, there needs to be a greater commitment to it. If you're going to go into the Big 12 Conference, it's one of the three best leagues in women's hoops. Baylor, they're one of the one of the top programs in the country in women's hoops. It's a great league. So I think there's got to be a stronger commitment financially to women's basketball if they want to contend. But I think Amber Whiting is going to be a good hire. And I like the recruiting prowess that she'll bring to the table with her connections in the AAU, Utah Hard Knocks. She ran that program. I think she's well-versed in recruiting circles in women's basketball. I think the big question is going to be, how is she managing a college program, the coaching, the X's and O's? Because everyone can pretty much recruit in the Big 12. Are you going to be able to out-scheme people? I think that's where the questions lie. It's a boom or bust hire to me. But I'm going to bank on the boom side because I think she's got some potential from the recruiting side to maybe open doors that BYU women's basketball hasn't had in quite a while. She's also, it's interesting, Amber Whiting is the first woman to lead the women's basketball program in 25 years. Jeff Judkins was the coach for about 21 years. Before him, Trent Shippen, and then now Amber Whiting going to be leading the program. And you think about it too, you know, it's a shock hire on the surface to think Burley High School to BYU. That's the type of move you would have heard of maybe in the 50s, the 40s, not in 2022. You know, it's kind of an old school move, getting a coach from the high school ranks and elevating that person to a high level college program. But when you think about it, how many coaches at BYU, first time coaches, have just been colossal failures? I mean, I don't think there's been that many. I mean, you could look at Gary Crowan, but he wasn't a first time head coach, first time at BYU. I just think that BYU, more times than not, has had a lot of success with their coaches, the infrastructure in place, the ability to get a certain inroads in recruiting. I think BYU's just got a structure that warrants some success. Now, it's a different climate being in a Power 5 league. I think there's going to be some struggles. You know, Kalani Sitake experienced it in football where those growing pains the first couple of years, they were legit, they were hard, and he had to grow a lot as a head coach, as a person overseeing the BYU football program. I think the same's going to happen for Amber Whiting, where there's going to be some growing pains. There's going to be some real struggles, and there could be a season or two in the Big 12 where BYU maybe wins 10 games. I think women's basketball is going to have some struggles in the Big 12 early on, but I think the potential with Whiting, with her recruiting connections, that's what it's about. It's relationships, inroads, connections. I think that's intriguing. And to me, I think that's something that makes this hire very interesting, and the potential is there for a lot of success down the road. It's going to take time, though. I think that year one in the WCC, the last year of the WCC, I'm curious to see what they look like next season because Shaylee Gonzalez expected to return, Lauren Gustin. You wonder what the thought process is with all those players. Are they bought in to a coach coming up from the high school ranks? She noted earlier to the media, Amber Whiting did, that she's going to have a team Zoom call and talk with everyone and make sure that everyone's re-recruited to come back to the team. Because Shaylee Gonzalez, she could be a superstar in the Big 12 her final year. Same with Lauren Gustin. Both those players, I thought, regressed a little bit at season's end. So there's a little bit more motivation to come back and do things right at BYU. So the transfer portal's not talked about much in the women's game, but it's something that's available to women's athletes as well. So Amber Whiting's got the task of making sure to keep everyone in place. It'll be interesting, too, to see how she rounds out her staff. She noted that all the coaches right now on the staff are still out recruiting for the good of the program. I think, you know, that'll be curious to see what type of money they commit to women's basketball assistants. I mean, the reported salary of Chris Burgess at $130,000 or so, that's for the men's team. You're going to go into the men's side is where it's there's back-to-back national champions in Baylor and Kansas. I can't imagine they're paying $130,000 for the women's assistants. So everything's got to step up. BYU's got to pay a lot more money to compete at the highest levels and give the tools necessary for Amber Whiting to have a lot of success, because if they don't commit financially, this could be a hire that goes sideways. But I think it will have success because I think of her ability to recruit. New inroads into women's basketball, I think that'll be a good thing. I also like the fact that she's coming from a basketball family. She's a basketball player, played at BYU, played at Weber State, Snow College. Trent Whiting, her husband, I think one of the forgotten great BYU basketball guards of all time. The only issue is that we pretty much only saw him for about 20 or so games, but he was part of that team under Steve Cleveland that got BYU basketball back to the NCAA tournament for the first time in about, it was 7 years or so, just 5 years after, or 4 years after, the program was a one-win team. Trent Whiting was an outstanding guard, a really good player. I remember he originally signed with Boise State, then he went to Utah. There was a lot of issues there with Majerus and Utah. Ends up finishing his career at BYU. I remember there was like the NCAA, he submitted a request to get a waiver for another year to go back to BYU, and the NCAA denied him. Completely ridiculous. But Trent Whiting was a baller. And the Whiting family, they are a bunch of hoopers. And the best of the group might be the daughter, Amari Whiting, who's committed to play for Oregon. And her mom, Amber Whiting, the new head coach, addressed where she's going to possibly play. She said it's still kind of in limbo right now with her possibly playing at Burley High this year or could be somewhere in Provo. Wherever it may be, BYU has got to get Amari Whiting. That's got to be recruit priority number one. She's the type of player that's getting offers from the best programs in women's basketball. She would be an even bigger star than Sheila Gonzalez, in my opinion, because she can shoot the ball better. Amari Whiting is legit. I mean, she's the type of player that can get a triple-double on any given night. She is a baller. Really good player. And that alone might be worth the head coaching hire, because you have her for 4 years. She's talented enough to carry a team. But I think it's an interesting hire. I think it's one that I think will have success, though, at BYU. Amber Whiting, the new head coach of the BYU women's basketball program. The men's basketball program still navigating the transfer portal. They lost out on a prospect out of the portal, Mo Njai, from Eastern Michigan. He's going to SMU. A little bit of a surprise. I thought there was a good chance BYU was going to land Mo, but he ends up going to SMU, and now the Cougars continue to pursue prospects in that portal. A name that surfaced today, Keon Brooks from Kentucky, a 6'7" forward, got a ton of programs after him. BYU has reached out with some interest. So, you know, and I think also there's a chance that I think BYU will play this thing out. You know, there's a possibility this could stretch out all the way to July. I think if you had gotten an Njai, you get Aiken potentially from Arizona, that would have sealed it and got the roster wrapped up. Now I think you're in a situation where you take your time and see what else gets added to that portal, potentially maybe an underclassman transfer, and you wait it out to, you know, June, July, maybe August at the latest. But remember, Seneca Knight was an addition in July last year. The problem at this juncture is that you're not getting the players that have, that on the surface would say they're going to be instant contributors next year. All those, that wave of portal prospects is kind of drying up. You might be getting rotational guys at this juncture going forward into late May, June, and July. That's kind of the reality of the portal, but there's still going to be ample opportunities. And we know with Mark Pope and his program, they will turn over every stone to make sure that happens. But that's the latest there with BYU basketball. On the gridiron, college football was, man, that was amazing stuff yesterday. Jimbo Fisher versus Nick Saban. I was there for all of it. I loved it all. It was fantastic. That is one of the great feuds I've seen through video, through press conferences, through this content was amazing. I loved it. In mid-May, to get these national champion head coaches bickering was incredible. And if you missed any of it, I mean, probably under a rock a little bit, but Nick Saban popped off in some Birmingham World Games 50-day countdown thing. I don't know what exactly it was. Only AL.com was there. And Saban, on the last question of the Q&A, sounds off on NIL and NIL collectives, and then goes into accusing Texas A&M of buying every recruit, accused Jackson State and Deion Sanders of getting a guy for $1 million. Then they popped off about Miami basketball getting a player for $800,000. Crazy stuff. I mean, it was just unreal what he was saying. Coming from Nick Saban, it's one thing going from Lane Kiffin, who always does that sort of thing. Like, you just expect it. He's even going viral on TikTok for his reactions with his daughter's TikTok videos. But you don't expect Nick Saban to pop off and call out specific teams. It was amazing. Then the next morning, you see Texas A&M announce they're going to have a press conference, and then Jimbo just unloads, calling it despicable 15 different times. Unbelievable. Telling the media that probably Nick Saban should have got slapped. Whew. And it got me thinking, okay, what would it take for Kalani Sitake to go off on a press conference like that? And I say Kalani because that man just, he typically on press conferences always will say nice things about the opponent. Always will. He'll always take the high road. When it comes to Utah, always taking the high road. Yeah, like if we're not playing them, we're cheering for him every other game. But, like, that's typical Kalani. He said something along the lines of, you don't want bad in your heart or something, it's not good. I'm just trying to think, what would it take for Kalani to pop off Jimbo style in a press conference? I will say, I've never been part of a press conference like that. Mark Pope got a little bit chippy after Utah beat BYU in the Huntsman Center his first year, that 2019-2020 season. He popped off at the refs, but emotions were high. BYU lost in overtime. They gave up like 28 to Rylan Jones. Mark Pope kind of got chippy there with the refs. But this is a mid-May offseason just teeing off on an opposing coach. I think the only way that Kalani would ever do something like this is if maybe someone attacked his family, like verbally accused him of, you know, something about his family. That's the only thing I could think of. Because the NCAA NIL stuff, when, what was it, Sportico came out and said BYU is doing these nefarious things with NIL. Kalani was asked, in like the early signing period press conference, he was asked by a member of the media, the local media, hey, there's this report about you guys maybe cheating or something. I can't remember the wording that was used. And Kalani's like, yeah, we have nothing to hide. Nothing to hide. Like he doesn't pop off. Like, I'm just wondering, what would it take for Kalani to pop off? You can share your comments on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. I think the only thing that could really maybe get him loose, unhinged, is if someone went off on his family. But the thing is like, Jimbo Fisher had all night to sit on it. He had all night, and then he pops off the next morning. It was incredible. I loved it. And it stacks up in like some of the great press conferences in sports. You think about Mike Gundy. I'm a man. I'm 40. John Chaney going off on John Calipari, basically saying he wants to kill the guy. That's like one of the iconic ones of my youth. Like every sports center top 10, when you think about the era of Rich Eisen, Stuart Scott, the crazy post-game press conferences or press conferences in general, John Chaney wanting to fight John Calipari. I always remember that one as a kid for some reason. I thought that was just so cool. Other ones, Dan Hawkins, he had, when he was at Colorado, it's intramural. You want to play? It's the Big 12. This ain't intramurals, brother. Oh, I love that one too. But Jimbo's has to take the cake, right? And some of the questions, too, he wouldn't let anyone in the media finish the question. Where is this coming from? We know there was those comments from Sliced Bread. I don't know. Sliced Bread. I loved it. Think about that, too. It's a situation where this whole talk about A&M's class, it really got amplified by a 24/7 sports message board poster named Sliced Bread on the Oklahoma message board. And it's amplified to these levels that Texas A&M's just cheating through their teeth. Look, I don't think that there's any cheating anymore in college football. I think with NIL, how can you honestly say it's cheating? Texas A&M is doing what they're allowed to do. They can, I mean, again, I don't understand why Jimbo is saying they're not cheating or not doing anything with paying guys. Like, just say, yeah, they got some NIL deals. What's wrong with that? The romanticizing of, oh yeah, they're just coming here to because they love the school, they love alma mater, they love Giggum, they love the 12th man, they love the midnight yell call. Like, come on. Like, there's no shame in saying, yeah, some of our number one rated class got some NIL deals lined up before they signed. What's wrong with that? To me, in the whole argument, I kind of side more with Nick Saban because I do think NIL collectives need to be reined in somehow, some way. Because I'm anti the pay for play thought too. And I do agree with Saban that I don't think it's sustainable for all of college sports. Because now you're getting to a point where these guys are going, well, what are you going to pay me? Where's the bag? What are you going to... I mean, the bag's always been there at programs like Bama, at programs like Texas A&M, I'm sure, for all these years. But now it's just, what are you going to line up? And it better be maybe more than half a mil, potentially. I mean, if you're a student athlete, go get yours. Go get it. I don't blame you. But there needs to be some reined in with NIL collectives because NIL, I think, is okay. I think everyone was a big fan of that. Got a little bit of breaking news here on the program. Once again, some breaking news. BYU football news. Jason Ayu has been named the assistant athletic director for football academics. So Jason Ayu, he was the director of recruiting, football recruiting. That job is recently posted earlier this week on BYU's jobs website. BYU Director of Athletics Tom Holmoe announced on Friday the hiring of Jason Ayu as assistant athletic director for football academics. Ayu previously worked as director of recruiting for BYU football for 2 years. Previous to that, Ayu was the director of athletic relations for BYU football. In his new role, this is from BYU, Ayu will work in BYU's Built for Life Center and report to Associate Dean of Students Trevor Wilson. Ayu is a new position that involves some reorganization in the Student Athlete Life and Learning Center. Also named an Assistant Athletic Director for Academics is Nicole Larson, who will oversee academics for other teams. Ayu, as well as Larson, will have other full-time academic advisors and learning specialists who will report to them. So some news once again on the football staff, as Jason Ayu will no longer be the director of recruiting. Jack DeMooney's no longer working with the recruiting staff either. So it's pretty much Justin Anderson is the point man for all things BYU recruiting right now. They are they have the posting listed for the director of football recruiting on the website, but Jason Ayu going to be going into a football academics role. I think that's a noteworthy move because I think Jason Ayu's done a really good job with BYU's recruiting efforts. I think you look at the prospects that the Cougars are involved in for the 2023 class. I think a lot of that goes to Jason Ayu, some of the vision that he's had with recruiting, pushing recruiting edits, pushing social media content, making sure that there's tons of communication with these prospects. I think he deserves a lot of a tip of the cap for what he's done with some of BYU's recruiting efforts to put them in a spot where 2023 could be a banner year for BYU in the recruiting world. So again, Jason Ayu now named assistant athletic director for football academics. That just coming down from BYU earlier today. Jimbo and Saban, where do you lie on the spectrum? You can share your comments with me on Twitter at @Mitch_Harper. Also on this live stream, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, share your comments. Who do you agree with, Saban or Jimbo? I'm more on the side with Saban because I think as a whole for the game of college football, it's got to improve. Now, Saban, he's a control freak, and I do think he's threatened a little bit. I thought Ross Bjork, the AD at Texas A&M, was a little bit extra, saying that the emperor's being dethroned potentially. That was a little bit much. He told Sports Illustrated that. But I do think that Saban, I think college football, they got to rein in somehow the NIL collectives. Now, how does that get fixed? I think people say this has got to get fixed, but they don't give many answers as to how to fix it. Personally, I think, you know, I love the one-time waiver transfer rule. I do, because I think that allows teams to have the chance to kind of rebuild the roster instantly overnight. Like, think about the team BYU faced last November in the Coliseum, that USC Trojan squad. How terrible that team was. Good talent, but just the depth wasn't there. Like, that wasn't USC. Now you look at that team, you got Jordan Addison, the Biletnikoff winner. You got Caleb Williams, Trey Dye. You got Relique Brown, one of the five-star running back recruits. Like, overnight, USC is going to be a national player. Overnight. Because of the one-time waiver. But I think if you want to rein in these NIL collectives, when it comes to guys like in the portal, I think you got to ditch the one-time waiver because then you can have some control. And I don't think that's something that can probably get you sued. I don't think. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe you could. I don't know. But that would be something I would ditch if you're trying to rein in the NIL collective game. And then maybe put in a rule where you have to be enrolled for an entire semester to qualify for NIL. There you go. Because then you're eliminating the pay for play where you're a high school recruit, you're a transfer portal guy, and you're just getting all this money instantly from these places. And by no means is that a bad thing for these athletes. Go ahead, go get yours. But I think if you want to curve this a little bit, curb it, that would be some of the moves I would go with, personally. But that's just me. That Jimbo Saban stuff was fantastic, though. I still don't really know what would cause Kalani Sitake to just pop off. I think the only thing would be something if someone attacked his family, like personally, verbally, said something about his family. But I don't even think he'd go to the press conference. He'd probably do it privately. He wouldn't do the low blow stuff that Jimbo was doing. Man, that would be amazing. I would love that, though. I would love to be part of a press conference like that. That's just epic stuff. It's good for college football. Thing is, too, October 8th, Texas A&M, Alabama, that will probably be in prime time, I would imagine. I would imagine CBS is going to flex that out and put it in prime time. So BYU, Notre Dame, good luck getting any viewers. You will not be seen at all that night. Even if Texas A&M's a 2-4 team or whatever they are at that juncture, that is going to be the game everyone's watching, and BYU Notre Dame might as well be played on ESPN 8 because no one will be watching it outside of BYU and Notre Dame fans, which is still a lot of people, but nowhere near the interest that Alabama, Texas A&M is going to have that same night. So that's a little bit of a bummer, I think. As me loving college football, I want to watch that game too. But I got to do my job and cover BYU versus Notre Dame. That'll do it for this edition of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a rating and a review. It helps out the show a ton. I'll talk to you on Monday here on the Cougar Tracks podcast. And it's always powered by KSLSports.com.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.